Hello, I'm Paul Fenton-Smith. Today I'd like to talk about soulmates. In public talks and workshops on soulmates, I often ask everyone in the room to describe the physical features of their first love. It might not have become a relationship, but it's likely to have made a powerful impression. Sometimes that first love is it's a longing from a distance. It's not even somebody you talk to. Then I ask everyone to list what they find physically attractive about another person. This is before any conversation occurs. These lists have been surprising and have included a solid eyebrow or monobrow. So some women said they like that guy with the one eyebrow straight across the brow. Obviously, they're the usual things. Some people like full lips, a specific hair colour, eye colour. And one woman said she liked a man with a missing front tooth. I thought, wow, she could visit a local prison. She'd be in love with everybody in cell block D. You know, she'd be in heaven, you know. Some said they liked hairy hands, men with hairy chests. I have a friend who's attracted to women with big teeth. And I call him a mammal who's enamoured with enamel. And it's just one of those things. When he visits, I'll open the piano and say, look at that smile. That's the biggest smile you've seen in ages, isn't it? Now, when writing this book, I interviewed about 120 people over a few months. And the woman who said she liked men with hairy chests, I thought, I need to know more about the background of this. And she said she grew up on a farm in western New South Wales. Her two brothers, herself, mum and dad. And obviously it's farm, it's very busy, dad's very busy. But on Sundays after lunch, he would spend up to an hour with her. They'd go down to the creek, they'd swim, they'd talk. And he'd listen to her. So every Sunday, it was an opportunity for her to swim with her dad and to tell him about her week, what happened, her friends, school camp, whatever was going on, you know. But when he was treading water in the creek, listening to her, she noticed his hair floating on the water, his chest hair floating on the water. And she made an association. That association was men with hairy chests are patient, they're kind, they listen, they have time for you. Now, it's not true in life, but it's just she made that association. And so to her, that was something she found attractive in a man. So these impressions regarding physical features often stem from initial or early attractions to people with these features. Sometimes the attraction can be genetic. In 1988, a friend of mine, Terry, and I were traveling through Ireland. Now, my father's from Ireland, so there's a genetic connection going back there. So it seemed like every second person I looked at had red hair. I couldn't believe it, all these red-headed people. And red hair never stood out to me before, but it did in that location. So Terry parked the car. I went off looking for a sandwich shop to get us a couple of sandwiches. We were going to head on driving still. And I couldn't find one. So I stuck my head into a dry cleaner's store and asked for directions. A young girl, maybe 20 years of age, smiled, looked up and smiled, bright red hair. I thought, oh my God, she's amazing, you know? And so she gave me instructions. I went off and got the sandwiches. On the way back to the car, I noticed a florist. I popped in, grabbed a bunch of flowers. Well, I bought a bunch of flowers, actually. Didn't just grab them and run. And took them back to the girl in the dry cleaner. When I got back to the car, I said, sorry, I'm late, Terry. There was this lovely girl in the dry cleaner. I just thought I'd give her some flowers. And he looked at me like, oh my God, like, what have you done? He said, you realize she's probably got four or five brothers in the IRA. We're going to be, like, we'll be dead by nightfall. We're leaving town. Slammed the door, off we went, driving, you know. And I'm thinking, wow, that's one way to look at it, I guess. But that's not what I was seeing. And it was just that genetic thing of red hair, just bang, all of a sudden, you know. So the obvious question is, what is a soulmate? I think soulmates are people we've spent time with previously, that is in previous lifetimes. This might have been as partners, friends, siblings, business partners, or even mortal enemies. So why would we seek soulmates? Essentially, to complete outstanding karma, to resolve unfinished business. So this means that although we have a sense of attraction to a soulmate or a sense of familiarity when we meet, because this often happens, when the unfinished business surfaces, it sometimes can be painful. In some instances, we've been partners previously and we were on to reunite to continue a good thing we had before. You know, we had fun, let's do this again sometime. Sometimes two partners are drawn together to complete some karma relating to a child they'll have together. Soulmates often occur in families. If you need some time to resolve a deep, long-standing issue with somebody, being born as a brother or sister or a child to that person, you've got a lot of exposure to them. You've got a lot of chances to do that. So parents and children are often soulmates. It's a surefire way to ensure they have opportunities to resolve past karma and to lighten their loads in life. It's not uncommon for siblings to have shared past lives, although not as always as family members. Sometimes past karma was painful for one person, and these deep-seated memories can be difficult to shake off. Sometimes a past life connection is a really good connection. When my son was born, I was there at the birth, and I remember holding him, and the first question I asked was, "Where do I know you from?" And I made a point of reminding myself, when you go home tonight, meditate, find out where you've been together, the two of you. And I did that, and we'd been together in the UK in the early 20s. We were old men in the early 20s there, and we were friends. And it was funny because even growing up as a child, you could see he was waiting. "I want to be tall, as tall as you, so you take me seriously. I'm equal to you. I'm not your son, you know?" And so I used to tease him. I said, "This lifetime, you'll always be my son." You know, it's like, "Oh!" Sometimes the past karma was painful for one partner, and these deep-seated memories can be difficult to shake off. In the 1980s, I specialised in past life regression using hypnosis. I find it helpful with resolving past life issues and some things that overshadow our lives currently. One client who was about to marry her partner admitted she never actually trusted him. If he was ever late home or didn't respond to a message, she'd begin to imagine catastrophes. Because she didn't do this with friends and hadn't done it with previous partners, I suggested perhaps a past life regression could help her discover why she does that. In particular, I regressed her to an incident or situation that caused her fear of abandonment regarding her current partner. In that lifetime, they were also partners. He was also her husband. But in that life, he was called away to war and he died on a battlefield. It took several months for her to hear the news, and she didn't really get a sense of closure. She didn't see him buried. She didn't get to say goodbye. And so that shadowed the rest of her life in that lifetime. So as a result, in this life, she expected him to repeat the process as if it was a pattern. By experiencing the process through vivid memories in hypnosis, she was able to remind herself, that was then, this is now. As a result, when she started to feel panicked because he wasn't responding to a text, she could recenter herself. Sometimes, in soulmate relationships, you have the right people in the wrong circumstances. So sometimes soulmates meet, but one or both partners already have commitments. Just because you've agreed to meet again doesn't mean to say you'll both be ready when you meet. One client told me about meeting a soulmate, the same soulmate, 5 times over a 30-year period, and each time one partner wasn't available. They initially met in London when she lived there. They met again when he visited Melbourne with his wife and children. A decade later, when she was holidaying in South Africa, they crossed paths a third time. He was single, but she was on her honeymoon. Then some years later, they met again when he visited Sydney for his grandchild's christening. And on that occasion, she was single, but he was supporting his wife through cancer treatment. They both felt very attracted to each other, but with each meeting, they exercised restraint. This can occur when soulmates cross paths, but have no lesson to learn in this lifetime. The continual reconnections are there to remind them that their time will come. But if they force the issue and leave current partners for each other, the resulting pain can cause more karma than it resolves. It can be painful to honour a past life promise when a person is unavailable. In these circumstances, it's important to remember that we can have several soulmate opportunities for love in a single lifetime. During a public talk some years ago, I was asked how you can know if a person is your soulmate. And I had to think about this because no one had ever asked me this before. And I pondered it for a moment, then explained, you feel inwardly still when you're with your soulmate. There's no need to perform, to impress, to struggle or to strive. You just feel centered and still. However, if one person resists the relationship or sabotages the opportunity, there's no stillness. Then there's only sadness and disappointment. It's possible to say no to a soulmate partnership. If someone's burdened by past life emotional baggage, they might resist a soulmate. You can't make someone ready for an opportunity, no matter how positive that partnership might be for them. In these circumstances, it's important to be gracious and to step back. This is usually the best path to take if a soulmate is abusive, has a serious addiction issue, or there are other red flags. Just because you've shared time together in the past, doesn't mean to say you have to pursue that right now. For some decades, it's been very popular to make the perfect partner list. And that makes sense, because if you're trying to manifest something, sometimes you've got to be very precise about what you ask for. However, I would say don't do it. The longer your list, the less likely you're going to find someone to match it. A friend of mine, Natasha, and her friend Holly made a couple of lists around the same month, and the lists were very different. Holly's list was about 10 things, 15 things maybe on a list, pretty simple, straightforward, easy to match. Holly's was an exhaustive list containing 55 qualities she needed in a partner. So here are a sample of some of those qualities. He had to be available now, physically, emotionally, and psychologically. A man, not gay nor bisexual. Warm-hearted, kind, generous, sweet. Loving, affectionate, tender. Sensual and sexual. Able to receive, understand, and accept me as I am, a mother with a less than perfect body. Able to communicate his thoughts, feelings, needs, wants, and heart's desires. Light-hearted, optimistic, cheerful, and not moody, pessimistic, or bitter. He loves the kind of music I do. He's talented and successful. He's creative, but not in an art form I'm not interested in. He's healthy, vital, and vibrant, and not frenzied, agitated, or nervous. A brilliant mind, a sensational wit. Rich so he can travel and give money away and be generous. He must have a beautiful house in a beautiful place near to my mother. He must already have a fitted out camper van with two fantastic sleeping bags that zip together. Marvelous company and conversational all times of the night or day. Have a beautiful voice, dry palms and feet, and smells divine. He doesn't snore. I like his taste in clothing. I like his values and opinions. I have confidence in him and I trust and respect him. He's in touch with spirit and has attained wisdom and is not into any wanky cult or belief, but is grounded in the spirit directly and lives it in his daily life. He doesn't smoke or get drunk. He doesn't lie, but is not a prissy prune ass and knows how to do things moderately and have a good time. He's authentic to himself, tolerant, obliging, observant, whimsical, fanciful, and charms me. He likes films I like and doesn't make me go to dreadful, tedious plays or irritating sporting fixtures. It goes on in this vein. If you must make a list, keep it short. You only require 4 points on your list. 4. You want someone who's single, available, attracted to your gender, in love with you. If any of these are missing, expect upheavals. If any of these are missing, it's like a four-legged chair that has lost a leg. Don't get comfortable. So beneath the attraction are the underlying spiritual lessons. These might be simple at first, but trust me, the water can get deep suddenly. Underlying lessons might include, but it's not limited to trust another person deeply, to develop faith in yourself and your partnership together. They might include learning about the values of hope, compassion, empathy, or persistence. When you've met a soulmate and you've been together for some time, if you've learned the underlying lesson, the urgency to be together subsides. At this point, you might choose to stay together, especially if you've got children. But you can choose to move on to pursue other partnerships, to resolve other karma with other soulmates. When I learned about karma and soulmates in London in 1991, I was studying with my wife. She asked the teacher what our karma was together. And we were told it involved a child. Each of us had an individual lesson related to a child we'd have together. She then asked how long we were likely to be together as a couple. Yes, a loaded question. Our teacher, Christine, replied we'd embrace our lessons after 5 years together, at which point we could choose to stay together or separate. Our son was born 2 years after the UK visit, and we separated soon after our 5 years together. So how many soulmates in a lifetime? Well, how many spiritual lessons are you still to master? Remember that soulmates can be friends. They can be work colleagues, neighbours, gym buddies, or even enemies. So over the next week, consider how many people in your life might be soulmates. Relationships vary, so same gender soulmates in relationship, the underlying lessons are essentially the same. It's simply two people, two souls exploring intimacy, trust, faith, and negotiating and having their needs met. Before you can begin a new relationship, it's essential to resolve your past. This can be done through counselling, through forgiveness techniques, or through meditation. Whatever works for you. Then it's important to become centred in the present. Now this can be a challenge, especially with all the distractions of modern day life. Being present means that you're ready and available to meet the moment when opportunities arrive. Finally, it's time to open your heart to love. These three steps are paramount if you want a lasting, healthy partnership. They're essential to the foundation of trust, love, and self-awareness required for positive friendships and partnerships. If you're stuck in the past, you're unavailable for the joys that exist in today. If you're easily uncentered by thoughts of the past or the future, again, you're unavailable for love right now. If your heart is closed to love due to unresolved past pain or trauma, the love a partner might provide to you often doesn't reach you. Many years ago, I finished a relationship and I decided I wanted someone who'd pair most of my steps with me. I wanted something long-term where we'd grow together spiritually. So I sat down and wanted to know what would be the three steps that I'd need to do to make myself ready for love. And they were those steps I've just listed to you. Resolving the past, becoming centered in the present, opening my heart to love. So I recorded a guided meditation CD that includes these three steps. And I listened to each track daily for 2 weeks. So track one, I had to listen to it 2 weeks to get it right deep into my soul. Because as a hypnotherapist, I know the power of the subconscious mind to act on positive suggestions. So I took several weeks to script each meditation carefully before recording them. Every word had to be right. I wasn't thinking about making a product for other people to use. I only wanted to meet a new partner who offered a chance for soul development. When I finally listened to the guided meditations recordings, a new partner arrived before I completed the 2 weeks of the final meditation. And we've been married for 13 years now. Soulmates are people with shared history who provide opportunities for friendship, love, and personal development. Sometimes the shared history was so good that each person has vowed to meet again. This was great, let's do this again sometime. Sometimes it's so painful that we need to meet again to resolve the wounds and heal our scars. So if you want a quick confirmation about past life shared, you could do that by finding a clairvoyant who can access this information for you. If you want to directly discover past experiences shared deep in history, hypnosis can access these deeper soul memories. If you do it through hypnosis, it usually requires a few sessions because you want to be deep enough to ensure you're not imagining. Because my joke about this is everybody was a past life prince, princess, king. Where were the pimps and prostitutes? Where were the past life Roman viaduct builders? They're all out there. There are a lot more of them. Through the 80s, I did a lot of past life regression, not so much since then. But when I regressed people, they had ordinary lives, almost every single person. An experienced hypnotherapist can also guide you through the death experience in that lifetime. It allows you to discover what spiritual lesson you came to learn and if you learned it. So I firmly believe that if you're unavailable in any way, you'll attract someone who's also unavailable. Do your personal development work and you'll be rewarded with someone who's already completed their own healing. Now, because new karma is being created constantly, we're forming bonds with people whom we'll meet in the future. In other words, we're creating soulmates. If you stay in a relationship long enough, you'll become a soulmate because you've created some karma. So if you have any children, there's a karmic bond between you. This can be a positive bond if you've had a good relationship with your offspring or a difficult connection, particularly if you've had shared difficult experiences from past lives. It's funny because sometimes small children have memories of their past lives. And if so, usually these fade down by the time they get to school. One example of this is the 14th Dalai Lama, the current Dalai Lama. So the current Dalai Lama clearly remembered his past lives when he was a child. And apparently as a 2-year-old, he often stood at the gate of his parents' home staring off into the distance. When they asked him what he was waiting for, he explained that he was expecting the men who were coming to collect him. They were coming to take him home. His parents were slightly confused but dismissed this habit. They figured he'd grow out of it. Meanwhile, a long way away in Tibet, senior lamas were meditating to be guided where to find the next Dalai Lama as the previous one had died. When the monks eventually arrived at his gate after a long trek, he welcomed them warmly. To test him, they asked him to select a walking cane from a group of 4 canes they'd brought with them. He selected one and handed it to a monk. This was the cane that the 13th Dalai Lama had given to that monk some years before. He then selected a different cane that belonged to the late 13th Dalai Lama and smiled, nodding. He announced to his parents that the monks were going to take him home soon. People often think of soulmates as perfect partners. Instead, we often struggle with soulmate friendships or relationships as we address the unfinished karma they bring. However, it's still a positive process because as we resolve outstanding karma, we become better friends and we become better relationship partners. To do this smoothly and with minimum pain, it's essential to identify underlying spiritual lessons and learn them rapidly. Then it's a win-win situation for everyone involved.